Welcome to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. And remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. And I have a great guest on today. We have a great show. I just want to say, it's a day after Valentine's Day because, you know, we do tape before. And I hope you all had a good Valentine's Day. I sent roses to a very lovely lady, which reminds me of one of my favorite old jokes. And I usually don't do jokes on stage, but it's an old joke. The guy would be me. I gave my girlfriend a dozen roses for Valentine's Day. She said, oh, I guess you expect me to be on my back all week with the legs wide open. I said, why? You don't have a vase? That's my Valentine's joke. I love that joke, people. And a guy named Dennis Johnson used to tell it to the Comedy Factory outlet. But it seems so. We have a very funny guest, and we have a very funny guy, Jonathan Solomon. How you doing, Jonathan? Jonathan liked that joke. See that?
What, you don't got a vase? I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. No, I told Jonathan. Jonathan just got some coffee, and he's saying he didn't want the girly coffee, which makes sense because, you know,
vanilla, it was vanilla.
Yeah, it's sort of like, yeah, it's sort of weird. Yeah. But so, what did you get? The Vienna?
I don't know what I got. I smelled them all.
That's good.
It smelled like chock full of nuts. It
smelled
like
regular chock full of nuts.
Yes.
That was like that black. That was like that can. It had like mechanics on it.
Yes.
Like,
yes. Very good coffee. Very
and
good
Sanka.
Coffee.
Do you remember
it's American
Sanka?
Coffee.
Did you ever drink Sanka?
In those days, you had to do this in college when I wanted coffee quickly and you didn't have all these fancy setups. I had the little packets at college, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd be, you know.
That's funny because I remember
orange packet.
Yeah, orange packet, and it's funny. I remember the coffee because my ex wife, her parents were like rednecks, and I went and they had like the Folgers Crystal. Like I went coffee, and you see like. They'd be pouring hot water, you mix it. It always looked the same. It always looked like, just didn't look right. There's always like film on top of it when you had the crystal. It wasn't good.
Yeah.
So you're a big, where'd you go to college at?
I went to college briefly at Boston University.
Now you're a Jersey guy, we established.
Yeah, grew up in Jersey, went to Boston University to be an actor.
Okay.
And that ended rapidly.
Why? What happened there?
Didn't like actors. I mean, really, God bless actors, and I have actor friends, but I really, as a group, I'm willing to generalize. They're just not, you know, I didn't like being hugged by people because I hadn't seen them since lunch.
Well, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's this sort of idealism based on ignorance that drives me crazy.
And back then, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 47.
Yeah.
So back then, like... There was always like the actor like was wearing leg warmers. And you go, what the hell is this guy wearing leg warmers? It's like really? And no one was out. No one was like gay. No one said I'm gay. But there's a guy walking around the list with the leg warmers. And you're going, I'm guessing something's different with him.
Well, there was a guy. I spent a lot of time with a lot of guys up at. I had no idea what gay was. No clue. No clue what gay was.
No one did. We were all from New Jersey. We didn't know. We knew there was Guidos and not Guidos.
Did they know what gay was in other states? I don't know. 19. Well, I'm older than you. 19. I went to college in 1978. And we just had no idea. I mean, the whole school was probably gay. You know.
So who was the guy you said? Was there a guy with leg warmers back then?
Me. No. Yeah, there was leg warmers. There was tucking the pants into the sock.
Oh,
remember
God.
That?
Oh, God, yeah, that's awful.
Bunhead style. It was ballet dancer style. Bunheads, we used to call them. I used to do a bit about bunheads. I've been dancing since I was six. I haven't eaten since I was eight.
Okay.
That was the look, but everybody adopted it. You know, it became a style.
That's cool. So you went to the college. You didn't like it. You didn't like actors,
right?
And so then, you know, did you go back? Did you hang in Boston or did you go back to Jersey?
Well, no, it was a key. There was a real moment, epiphany moment. This woman named Zelda Fish Handler. Hopefully, she's hearing the show, and I owe her a card. I owe her a note. I should have sent her a card at some point
for Valentine's Day.
Should have sent her a card for Valentine's Day. She came to speak to the students, and she was the.
I can't interrupt. Sorry, her last name was Fish Handler.
Fish Handler. She'll know.
But Fish Handler, that's like, you know, that's crap. She must have got grown up. Like, Fish Handler.
But she was a very stern, sort of cultured woman. She was the head of the arena stage in Washington. And she came, we would get these people came in to talk to the students periodically. And she came in and she was talking to us about acting, and then some stray line went by. She said, at one point I thought I was much of an intellectual to be an actor, and I thought of becoming a comedian. But then I went and I just sat there in the assembly room going, oh my God, I've just heard the clarion call. That's me. I'm not an actor. I'm a comedian.
Were you always a fan of comedy when you were younger? I always talk to comics. Like, we all have to, you know, I've told the story many times that, you know, I had Toledo Window Box by George Carlin, which my parents didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was because my parents, you know, your parents, you listen to an album about pot when you're like in fifth grade. But I always knew. So many people, were you listening to comedy when you were younger, or how did that happen?
Well, when I was little, I knew every word of I Started Out as a Child from I don't know, when I was 7 or 8 years old, I went to camp and I was nicknamed Cause. People, kids at the end of 2 months didn't know my real name was Jonathan. I just recited Bill Cosby.
Oh, right, okay, constantly. So you...
Oh, yeah. And I stayed up to watch the Carson comics from probably the age of 10. My parents, I think, let me
Do you remember some of the first comics you saw that actually made a mark on you?
Bobby Kelton, I think, was one of the ones who I went, wow, David Say, Bobby Kelton. There's other
David
ones...
David Say, well, I worked with him years ago.
But there are other ones from when I was even younger.
Okay.
I just had this vision of, you know, you go to Carson and you do this spot and then you go open for music acts. To me, that was a career. You go to Vegas and open for
and
music acts.
And it actually happened like that back then.
Yeah. And so I wanted to be a comic. But the problem was, and why Zelda Vishandler brought me back around, I love saying her name, is I didn't know you could become one.
Okay.
You could watch them on TV. You could memorize their albums. But how did you become one? And then... Right around, I mean, we're so fortunate, Steve. All the folks you have on are fortunate because we're all in our late 40s, early 50s, and we all hit it just right.
Right.
Because when I started thinking about being a comedian, suddenly these clubs were exploding.
Well, it's funny because Rich Seidner was on, and he had said how it was like all of a sudden he would go on the road for 2 weeks, but then all of a sudden all these clubs started up, and so the next year you'd be on the road for like 6 weeks because, like, we need a comic. You're driving through there, we got a new club, come by.
Yeah.
So, did you start out of Boston or out of New York?
No, out of New York. York,
okay, so you came back to South Orange.
Yeah, came back to South Orange, hitchhiked around the country, just blowing off steam.
What was that like, man?
Did you just, that was amazing.
Did you have places to stay, or you just said we're going to hostels? Or
just put out my thumb.
So you couldn't do that now?
No, you couldn't do that now. In fact, I would say it was the last... Right down was the last window of opportunity to be able to hitchhike around the country where anyone would pick you up, even.
Yeah, because I guess it's funny because for me, when I was in college, I'd be lived on the Jersey Shore. And I worked in Stone Harbor, but I lived in Avalon. And I used to hitchhike to work. And back then, people would pick you up, but it's in the day. And, you know, I hate to say it, but I'm white. I mean, I hate to say that, but I was clean cut. So people aren't going, oh, this guy might, the other people you have to look out for. Like, I could have been a serial killer, right?
Right.
You know, but you could, but now people, I wouldn't pick up a hitchhiker now.
You know, sometimes I want to pick up a hitchhiker, and occasionally I do just to keep the bond over.
When's the last time you saw a hitchhiker, though? I haven't seen any lately. I never see them.
No, you see them sort of. The last time I picked up a hitchhiker was in Arizona. It was an older guy, and he ended up being a great story. He considered himself. An itinerant preacher. He was basically a homeless guy.
Okay.
But he told me about the Lord for a 3-hour drive, you know. And
what
that's a great opportunity.
Was he like on a freeway or what was he doing?
Well, I got a chance to talk to him. That was good. He was at a rest stop.
Okay.
And he was sort of wandering around and he was going up to people with their cars. So I got a chance to chat with him a little, see that he didn't smell too bad and that he wasn't, you know, going to grab the reel from me and drive us into a ditch to bring the second coming.
Right, right.
So, and then I drove him for about 3 hours, and then at some point, randomly, he said, this is where I want to, I've arrived.
And it was just like,
it made no more sense than where he'd gotten on.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. So, but that's cool. You picked up because I never see hitchhikers. Because that's a big thing. When I was in college, people would sit there and they would write. We were right near the Parkway exit, the Jersey Parkway, and they would sit there like if they're going to Brigantine or they. And it was so rampant at my college, the hitchhiking, that in the bookstore you could buy books. Notebooks that said Brigantine or whatever town, so you would just sit there and hold it.
Oh, that's wild!
They had like Brigantine and or Cape May or whatever, and they would have it, and you would see guys holding these books. And it's funny because on Facebook, someone has it. You know, you went to Stockton, and someone said the book, and that's true. And the guys would sit right near you. Because it was people coming out, sit right near that and hold it and say Brigantine. Oh, okay, you got a ride.
Well, that's actually how I got into it. Was the other reason I hated BU is I fell in love with a girl from my high school like the day before I went off to college.
Okay.
Classic.
Which is
and so
great.
I would hitchhike home every like 2 weekends.
You hitchhike from Boston?
Boston to New Jersey, which was relatively easy because there was always some college kid. But I got used to the idea of putting out my thumb, and that's sort of how
weird.
I got started.
That's just
but even in those days, your trip was more trippy. I don't mean drug-wise, although there was that too, but your adventures were weird because it was already to the point where weird people were picking you up.
Right.
I mean, 9 to 5, you know.
Aren't picking up a hitchhiker.
Yeah. It was already sort of odd. Folks in the adventures tend to
What are some of the oddest you ran into? I got to hear this. Just like some of the, you went, did you ever get in a car and go, holy crap, I might die?
Okay, all right. We got picked up. Here's an interesting thing that the folks probably don't know from those days. I went out and I went to 2 Dead concerts. I'd never been to a Dead concert in my life. And I hooked up with all these Deadheads. They were clean cut because they were hitchhiking too, and they knew to get rides, they would They would, they were clean cut deadheads. And actually, that's a side point to the story. The point, we got picked up by these two guys in a van, and we start driving, and now we're in the middle of nowhere. Got picked up at Grand Junction, Colorado, because the concert was in Denver, at Red Rocks. Now we're Grand Junction. We go to this little town. We come to this. We're halfway between there and this little town called Salina, Utah.
All right.
And the guys get naked in the van. They take off their clothes. These were not gay guys.
No, no, no. Just driving. When they're driving, or just
one guy's in sort of. And what they had in the van was it was a van full of paraphernalia for drugs. They sold to head shops, but they weren't high. But they got naked. I don't know.
They just drive it naked with drugs, paraphernalia.
Naked, driving naked.
Oh my God!
So we figured, me and this other deadhead guy, we decided we better get. We're not going to stick with these guys.
Right, right.
So we get out of the car in Salina, Utah, which is a little town in Utah, and hence the name Salina, Utah. And we go to the bus stop. We're going to, spring for a bus. We're not going to hitchhike in Salina, Utah. You can just tell looking around the town.
Right.
Not a place to hitchhike. We go to the bus stop. We sit. The police come. The peace officers.
Okay, me. All right.
And they say, you're not taking a bus in Salina, Utah. And we say, well, no, we just paid. And they say, no, you stay here in the bus station in Salina, Utah. We're going to show you what Utah peace officers are all about.
What?
What? So we get the sense that they just don't want us in their town. So they walk us to the edge of town. And they say, go to the edge of town. They point us to the edge of town. So we start walking to the edge of this town. Then... This story is so trippy.
I'm lost. I would be freaking out.
Yeah, we were freaking out. Well, you don't know the half of it. We had a little... I can't believe it. This is not the... this is nothing to do with comedy. We had We had a little teeny brick of hash with us.
Okay.
So we're talking to these cops with a brick of
hash.
And
you're crapping yourself.
Yeah. So we go to the outskirts of the town, and then these... pickup trucks keep yelling at us, freak, faggot, all this stuff, you know, and we go, man, it's such a teeny town. How could there be so many people driving by yelling at us? And then we realize it's this teeny town. The same five trucks are going around and around yelling at us every 2 minutes because they make the loop back through town. So we're not being yelled at by 100 people. We're being yelled at by five guys. Right. So now we're being yelled at, and then we decide that we're at the right place. Then the cops come and they go, no, that's not where the border of Salina, Utah is. You have to go another half mile. So we walk another half mile. Then we stand there for a while. Then the cops come and they go, no, that's not where the border of Salina, Utah is. They point us another half mile. So at this point, we decide to swallow the hash.
Oh,
we can't smoke it. We're going to swallow. We got to get rid of it. We don't want to. I would have just thrown it away, but the other guy was a much bigger head than I was. He was not going to waste his brick of hash. So now we're like, you can really kind of trip off of hash if
you
swallow it.
Especially if you eat it all, on an empty stomach because you're waiting for a damn bus and you're with naked guys.
So we're finally we get past the outskirts of town and it's dark and there's no car, so we lay down and go to sleep. Okay, wake up. A few hours later, totally tripping, I hear water running. Now, we're in Salina, Utah. It's flat. There's nothing around. How could there be water running? We look around. We look at water running. Where's water running? And at the same time, we see this little light floating at us, sort of in the dark, a little light floating. And we're like, what the?
Right.
Turns out it all made sense. In Salina, Utah, you get different hours of the day or night. You get your allotment of water irrigation to your property. So this property had its light, had its water irrigation at like 4 in the morning on this particular night. And we were on the front area of a guy's house where he had a little bit of crops and he was retired. And he lived with his wife in a nice house with a big porch. The guy used to be a welder. He had a welder's hat that he would put on his head, and that's not a welder, miner with a flashlight on the top that he would put on the top of his head so he could walk around and see and not have to carry the flashlight. Hence the floating light coming at us. So he comes out, talks to these two stoned kids. He has no idea what stoned is.
How'd you end up there?
Well, we're in front of his property. That's where we've laid down in the pitch black darkness. Okay. We have no idea where we are. So he and his wife say, you fine young boys, come and sleep on our porch. So that's how I ended up sleeping on a porch, stoned out of my mind on hash in Salina, Utah.
Why did the cops want to throw you out? Were they just dicks?
They were just, you know, whatever you want to call it. They did not like
funny.
Us.
Yeah. See, that's people, that's what,
they,
that's why.
They didn't need to see long hair to know what a deadhead was. That's why they
didn't like us. That's why people like us become stand-ups people, because we end up sleeping in porches. churches with irrigation with miners on that. See, we all have weird stories.
Yeah.
So after you hitchhiked, you went back to New Jersey.
Right.
And you said, I'm going to do comedy, or what guided you to do
comedy? No, I actually did it. I'm telling the story chronologically incorrect. I did it a few times when I got out of BU.
In Jersey or in Boston?
In New York. I went and stood online at the Good Times. Was it called the Good Times?
I've heard of that. Good Times Cafe or something like that?
I went and stood online at Catch a Rising Star and didn't get a number. But people, you know, it was booming. And people told me, you know, there's this other club downtown. If we run, maybe we can get a number there.
Right.
And I went and got a number there, and I went on that night. And that was the beginning.
And so you did that. And how did your first night go? Because oftentimes, some people die. It's a weird story. It's either some people died or some people did really good and they got too cocky. So the next time they went back and they died, and they didn't come back for like 3 months.
My answer is I did both.
Okay.
I murdered. I got huge boffo laughs, I thought.
Okay.
I taped the first night I ever performed.
Okay.
I have that tape. I get maybe 2 tepid laughs in my 5 minutes.
Oh, that's
funny. But I was so high on the whole thing, not drug high, but just thrilled. My whole life waiting for this moment. I couldn't have been happier, and I thought I was God's gift to stand-up comedy.
See,
I was just thrilled.
I have to go back, and I don't have my VCR hooked up, but I know I have my... I don't know if I still have them. I have my tape from the first time I was at the Comedy Factory outlet in Philadelphia. And I still have that tape. And I had, of course, the blazer, because every comic had a blazer.
Yep.
And I had like a wife beater under the blazer. Why?
Don't ask.
I was
Italian?
And I had hair. I called it a guinea tea.
Right.
And Clay Heary, the host, is like making friends with Italians everywhere. And I was like, okay. I was talking to a comic. Now you were, you're in New Jersey. You're going to New York. Now, when did you start getting up on stage a lot? I mean, because there's all that time. It's like, you know, because back then, and there was open mics. Like, we could get on Thursday at the Comedy Factory outlet and a Wednesday at the Comedy Works.
Right.
So, did you start getting spots right away, or did you have to sit there and, like, do the crappy one-nighters? I mean, what was your correlation? Because, you ended up on TV and everything like that. What was your correlation? Just you stayed in New Jersey. You didn't move to New York?
No, I moved to New York right away.
Okay.
I did that night at the I think it was called Good Times or whatever it was called. And then I did a few more times at these clubs. And I think I passed auditions in that first few weeks at Comic Strip, I think.
Okay.
And I think... I may be wrong, but I think what happened was I was so thrilled to be regular at a club that as far as I was concerned, I had made it.
Okay.
And then I... I went and hitchhiked, like as if that's my career. I'm
done. You hitchhiked after you got passed.
After doing like maybe 6 or 7 spots, you know?
Okay.
And then I came back, and I, for some reason, the comic strip wasn't, it wasn't my dream. The improv was, I guess.
Okay.
Anyway, when I passed at the improv is when I remember then every night being there, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
You go in every night and hang out?
2 in the morning.
Would you get spots all the time or no?
I'd always get a spot, but it was late. It was the classic late night thing. And again, in those days, because it was the boom of comedy, there was audiences at 3 in the morning dying to hear these comics, you know?
I mean,
they were there at 10 p.m. for Reiser and Glenn Hirsch and Jerry Seinfeld, and they were there at 2 in the morning. They were there at midnight for Rick Overton. And they were still there 2 in the morning for Jonathan Solomon.
Who were some of the guys like in your group? Let's say like that were your buddies, because you always have the comic. Like mine was a guy named Neil Bobel, and then we had Pat Tompkins and Adam McKay. We had this little Philly clique. We were
sure
after Todd Glass. Todd Glass had already been established, but he was our age. And then it was like the Keith Robinson. It was like a little class. You always say like the class before you're like
sure. We used the same expression. The class.
They're a feature and you're an MC,
right?
And then they're a headliner and you're a feature. But then we had our group. So who's some of your group?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I'm always trying to explain to people graduating class, like who was your graduating class. Well, one guy, the guy I used to walk home with every night would save our cab fare. The improv was at 45th and 9th, and we both lived on 7th. We lived at about Avenue B and 7th Street. He lived on 8th. I lived on 7th.
How far of a walk is that?
It's a long walk, but, you know, man, we were so high from every set we did. I wish I hadn't ascribed this word high to pot at the beach.
Right. I know exactly.
Just a rush.
I used to say, if I felt – I could go to a – I used to play my hometown, Cherry Hill, every Christmas, and I always get sick at Christmas. And I had to sit there, and I would not – be drinking tea with honey and lemon, and I'd be like, I'm gonna make it. And then you get up on stage, and boom, you're fine. And you get off, you're like, my God, my fever just dropped from 102 to normal.
Right,
I mean, it is
absolutely
that high. It's just something it oozes out of you. And
yeah.
I mean, it's weird that you say high, and it is a high. I mean, that's the true
it's
high.
A physical, yeah. The guy I walked home with every day for a year and a half was a guy named Steve Buse. Can you figure out who that is? Steve Buscemi.
Okay.
Boardwalk Empire.
It's funny because Middleman said, Steve Middleman said he used to run into Buscemi, and Buscemi's like one time, he's like, hey, I like your act. He's like, wow.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. So Steve had a bit. What was it? Steve had some great jokes.
So he was a comic.
Yeah.
Now, did he know Sandler? Because he always shows up in Sandler's movies. I was wondering if there's a connection.
I have no
there.
Idea. Okay. I don't think so. I don't think they're this. Well, no, Sandler came after
Sandler,
that.
Sandler's more.
Steve was done by then.
So Buscemi, would you walk in with him?
Yeah. All right. I got to do a Steve. I got to do a Steve Buse joke. I got to do a Steve Buse joke. All right. Steve Buse, ladies and gentlemen. I was adopted. My parents were very sensitive about explaining to me when I was 4 years old. They sat me down and they said, "Mama, Dada, you were adopted." Did I not tell it right?
Yeah, I'm just not focusing. I'm sorry.
But he was great. He was great.
So
I apologize for not doing your bet better.
He went straight to, he just got out of doing stand-up at all, just went to the acting route, or what happened with him?
No, he became a firefighter.
Really?
Yeah, and then he did this indie film called Parting Glances, and suddenly he was the sensation of the East Village.
Wow.
And then he started, then he went more mainstream.
Well, who were some of the other colleagues, let's say your colleague or classmates?
I'll tell you, I get to the, I don't know, I used to, after Steve lived at A, and I would let go, I'd leave off with Steve at A, and then I had to walk to C. And to get to C, Avenue C, I had to walk through this park where there was all these homeless people.
Okay.
There was a guy there, what did I used to call him? I used to call him the conductor, because he used to sleep in an old band shell, homeless guy. And I used to riff with him at 3 in the morning after I did my spots at 2 in the morning, the improv. This homeless guy.
Okay.
I used to riff with him. So you could see, I mean, we were just charged up. And then he would always ask me, he'd say, got a new joke for me? Meaning he understood the thing, because I told him about it, that the older comics passed down jokes, long form to the younger comics.
Right.
So you were building, and every night I would tell him one long form joke. And then my night would be done. And he would always say to me, so you got that last taste. That's what he'd say to me, like a real drug reference. He'd go, you got your last taste? And I'd go, yeah. And
wow.
Okay, go home. Go to your crib. He'd say, okay, go to your crib and write some jokes.
That's funny.
Yeah, it'd be like 4 a.m. Go to your crib and write some jokes.
That's cool. That's cool. I thought you were going to say he became like, it's like, not God became it. I was like,
yeah, right.
Wow.
Right.
Wait, he was homeless? Oh, my God.
Yeah, right.
He stole your act? Yeah. That guy became Sandy Hackett.
Right. No. Well, all the guys who ran the door at those clubs became, they ran HBO. They ran.
So what else? So who should be
our guys? So who were our guys? Our guys were Ray Romano.
Okay.
John Manfrilotti, Mark Cohen.
Because John Manfrilotti was in, I remember him, but he was in Men of a Certain Age.
Yeah, Men of a Certain Age.
So I guess
Mike Rowe.
Okay.
Bill Grunfest, Charles Zucker.
Wow.
John Stewart. Jeez, God, my brain.
But no, but that's a lot. Man. You remember a lot. That's a good.
No, but there's
and like Roe went on to write, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Was Billiam Cornell in your crowd?
Billiam Cornell's in the crowd. Okay. Absolutely, Billiam. John Mendoza. He was a little ahead of us. John Mendoza was a little ahead of us.
Mendoza was on the show. Mendoza's, he's funny. Yeah. He tells still one of the best jokes.
What's his joke?
I told him, and I don't want to do justice to it. He goes, I have a friend. I don't know. He talks about his fat friend. He goes, I want to be with him when the world ends because I know he'll know where the food is.
Right.
And that's his joke. I just remember seeing that, and that just makes me laugh. I mean, it's one of those things.
Mendoza is one of these comedians. He is brilliant.
I don't know how he remembers his act. He does like so many damn jokes.
Yeah.
I can't even remember. I do longer bits. He said, I forget how many jokes he says he'll do in like a 35-minute set.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
How do you remember that?
Yeah. Well, once you write him, then you sort of know.
Yeah, but you know.
Mendoza was amazing about me. I didn't see him Mendoza for years, because I don't go to the clubs anymore.
Right.
And then a couple years ago, I dropped in the club now and then, and because I'm teaching comedy now. So I go in the clubs now and then for various reasons. And he was so good 10 years ago. But if you watch Mendoza now, you see what happens if a really good comic continues another 10 years.
Right.
Because the persona he had was so good and so natural. Now it's like It's like grown into the ground. It is right. So real. It is so organic.
I saw him in Vegas.
Yeah.
He opened for Howie Mandel.
Yeah.
He was in that. Yeah, but the same thing.
It's great.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Jonathan. So we're going to actually start talking about comedy, not about hitchhiking, people. Remember, people, hit me an email, Cooper at Indie100, INDIE100.com. Listen every Friday at the same station at 3 o'clock. Me, entertainment lawyer John Foggerholm, and comic Sheldon Anderson. We host a show called Living in the Law. This Sunday, I'll be at the Ha Ha Cafe in North Hollywood, and next Tuesday I'll be at the Palms in West Hollywood. So check it out. We'll be back with Jonathan Solomon. 1 second. Let me find my. I'm out of it today, Jonathan. I'm sitting here.
I'm not helping.
I gotta tell you something. Before I go to break, and this sort of pisses me off. Tell me if I'm wrong. I go to this bar. I'm not gonna mention the name. I go to this bar right around the corner from my house. I live in Burbank, right. And I tip good because I used to be a server. I tip 20-40%.
Right. Okay? Great.
Now, my bill, now it's half price drinks last night. So I get my bill. My bill is $7.60. Right? The girl gives me $12 change back. She took 40 cents from me. I have a problem with that. She should give me $12.40 or give me $13. And I sent them a letter. I used the C word. And I said, and I know the owners. And ooh. I said, I put a star. I didn't actually spell it.
Yeah.
But I said, this, whatever. I don't know how she works there. I said, she's stealing 40 cents. That may not sound a big thing. And it's not. It's the principle. She does it to every customer. She's ripping off, you know, I mean, that's... Am I wrong to be pissed about the 40 cents?
Well, I'm playing Pollyanna here. Does she have a really low expectation of tipping, and therefore this was her way of getting a tip?
No, because they pull the tips, and the guy at the bartender, I gave the guy $4 on $7.
Well, then it's not only rude, it's stupid. Who's not going to notice it?
She gave me 12. I'm like, I don't notice the 40 cents. Like, she would give me, even like when I was a server, if a bill was like, $8.25 and someone gave me $20, I would give them 12 back. I would eat the quarter because you get a tip. But she just basically ripped 40 cents off me.
No, I think she cut her nose to spite her face
I wrote a rude letter, and I felt bad, but I was like, that's just wrong. She should be fired.
Anyway, tell me who she is.
We're going to go to break, and I'll be back with Jonathan Solomon. Sorry about that rant, people, but that's life.
It's Cooper Talk, baby. Never miss a show again. KYHY on the go. Tune in on your smartphone. Visit www.925kyhy.com and click the smartphone link.
Fairy residence, Tooth speaking. Sorry, there's no credit fairy here. What's that? He magically raises your credit score? Yeah, there's no credit fairy. But you can improve your credit by paying bills on time and keeping your credit card balances low. Money under your pillow? Sorry, kids only.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. Brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
For 10 years now, the Indie Bible has helped thousands of independent artists gain more exposure for their music. The 10th edition features 4,200 publications that will review independent music and 3,400 radio stations that will play independent songs. It also includes hundreds of labels, distributors, and digital download sites. Over 9,000 contacts in all. Included are 50 helpful articles written by music industry experts. The Indie Bible shows musicians where they can get their music reviewed, their songs played, and their CDs sold. For details and to order online, visit www.indiebible.com. From country to rock, hip-hop, reggae, rhythm, blues, alternative, metal, and jazz, we are independent music. Independent music. The Y.
The Y.
Welcome back to. It's so funny. Jonathan's like, are we back on? I said, who do you have health insurance with? He's like, back on. I go, I think I have a hernia. He's like, are we back on? I think I have a hernia. I don't know. It's either that or a tumor, but I don't think it's a tumor. And that's too much information, people. So either I'm going to be dead or I have a hernia. I don't know which it is, but I have to get health insurance. And I had some guy, I contacted this, I answered this thing online.
Yeah.
And this dude kept calling me. And you can, I got a number because I have this new phone. And those who people comes right. And says whatever Michael Lee or whatever, and I'm like, okay, I'm at Best Buy buying a TV, I'm gonna bother them, so I turn it off, and then it rings like 30 seconds later and it says unknown ID, so you know the guy put *67 in your number, and then it rings again. I go, hey jackass, I'm buying a freaking TV, don't call me three times in 5 minutes for the help, you know. So I got in touch with another guy. I'm gonna go through, but it's like, you really, you call me that many times? If I don't pick up, it means I'm busy. You know, and then don't call back with that trick, the *67, said that people don't know who's calling.
Right.
It pissed me off.
Right.
But anyway.
As far as hernias go, we won't do this on the air. You've come to the right place. I'm the hernia expert.
Have you had the hernia?
Expert. Went to Canada to this hernia emporium where they do only hernias. So I know all about hernia operations.
Really? It's a bump right here. Is that a hernia?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't actually look at you.
No, right there.
He's going to show me now.
No, right there.
Yes, yes. That is where hernia is.
So it's not cancer.
If it doesn't hurt, it's hernia.
It doesn't hurt.
Right, yeah.
So it's not cancer.
Yeah, yeah. There's this place called the Schuldeis Clinic near Hamilton, Ontario, where they invented the way that they do it everywhere now with this wire mesh. But they invented it there like 30 years ago.
Is it a major operation?
No, it's not a major operation, but they started using wire mesh, which makes it so that it never happens again. Because it used to be you got your hernia fixed, and then 2 weeks later you played basketball, and 3 weeks later you went and got it fixed again.
See, this is Cooper Talk, people. Yeah. We have a comic who wrote for Mad About You. He's been on TV. I even complimented. I used to love the way he dressed. I remember on TV. And we're talking about hernias.
Right, well,
this is what Cooper Talk is, people.
This is comics. Last of the Jew comics.
I'm not even Jewish. I grew up in a Jewish town, and this is my one bit.
Right.
I grew up in a Jewish town. I said it was 85% Jewish. Actually, it was 90% Jewish, but they bargained with the census. That's my one bit. See, people, I did a bit today.
This is what happens when you have an old Jew comic on. I mean, I tell people I'm old. I'm old for the business now. This is what happens. An old Jew comic tells you about his hernia.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is.
Well, me and Jonathan are also talking about the crappy comics are always on. Like you go to a show and you'd be hanging out. Did those guys annoy you?
Well,
hey, Solomon, I got a joke. Hey, Solomon, I got a joke.
Yeah, the guys who are on are shunned pretty much by comics. You know? Although there are guys who do meta on. They do a send-up of being on.
Okay.
Like Mike Rowe does these jokes, bada-bing, bada-boom, and he's doing being on.
Yeah, it's a character.
He's
doing a character of like the typical dumbass comic.
Right.
Then
he's hilarious.
Dom Herrera does the lounge act.
Right.
He's doing a setup on that.
Right. And he's hilarious at it. And then there's a few guys. I used to play in a poker game with Hank Azaria, who does all the voices on The Simpsons.
Right.
He's just so theatrically funny or character funny that he may be purposely being funny, but it's so good you can't hold it against him. It's just astonishing.
That's him.
Plus, when he wants to, he can turn it off 100%.
Right.
The guys who can't seem to turn it off, comedians have no use for them.
Yeah,
and a lot of people out there in the civilian world thinks that's what comics are.
I know. They said, you
wanted to class clown in school?
Yeah, I was never a class clown. I made the other people laugh, but I was quiet.
I always figured that most of us, I mean, for myself, what I was in school was I was the kid who had weird notions. You know, I would say, I think this and that, and, you know, and, you know, they planted three flags on the moon. Maybe they're building a golf course. And people go, what?
Right.
You realize that is what a comedian is. It's
right.
just that's a premise. And then what you do is you learn to write a joke out of your odd thought.
Right.
So those are beginning comics with these odd thoughts.
See,
people
still to me go, Cooper, you're just whacked. And I go, yeah, because I'll come up with stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like,
right.
Where does that come from?
Right.
I go, I don't know. I'm not doing a bit. I'm just in a conversation. Because my type is, I'm the type of guy, if I go to a party, okay, and you're probably the same way. If I go to a party and I don't know anyone, I'm pretty quiet.
Right.
But once you pick up on that girl or the guy that has, like, you can tell they got a cool vibe.
Right.
And you start talking to them, or, like, they might know, like, someone you know, and they get you.
Right.
Then you'll be in the corner, you guys will be laughing your asses off. But when I go to a party, I'm not like, hey, look at me, where's the lampshade?
Right.
You know, it's, I don't think most comics are like that. I don't think.
Yeah, and these people say, well, whack, though. And then what you got to say to them is, give me 10 minutes alone with my computer to write up the bit, and then you'll see I got something, a gem out of this whack thought.
We're going to go back to comedy right now, because you did a lot of TV. You used to do like improv and all that stuff.
Yeah, I did all the shows. I did Letterman a bunch of times.
Now, was that, were you going on the road then too, or were you just basically?
No, I was doing the road. Yeah, sure, to make a living, I did the road.
Did you like the road?
I loved the road. When I was doing the road, I loved the road.
And back then, there was the clubs were a week long. I mean, it wasn't like now, like 3 nights. I mean, you could do like 8, 9, 10 shows.
Tuesday, come back Sunday, yeah.
So where were some of your favorite clubs?
Gee, I don't know. I always loved going down to. I'd always managed to get at the comic strip during spring break. That was
Fort Lauderdale.
Heaven.
I played
that
there.
Was great.
I played there.
Yeah. So that was. I don't know how I managed to get that gig, but I always did. When the college girls were down there, that was insane.
Of course. And he was 40. No.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, that, let's be honest, that if we're, let's say the unsaid.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, the reason you're in stand-up comedy, I mean, I got to speak for probably most of the big-nosed Jews out there, is to get women that you would not otherwise have gotten.
Yeah, the unattainable.
So what was a good room, you know?
Where the hot chicks were.
Right, where the hot chicks were.
Where'd you play in Philly? Did you play the Works or the Outlet?
I played Steve Young's place.
The Works, okay.
And then I played the teeny place. There's a medium, and the big one is Steve's, right? That's the largest room?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then what's the small room?
The Comedy Factory Outlet?
Ben Curlin used to play. He was always there.
Going Bananas.
Okay, because Comedy... Started at Going Bananas, moved up to Steve's
room. And then Comedy Factory Outlet was right across, right. Which was also a good club. So you were a Works guy, because you'd always have your pictures on the wall when you come up. Because I remember Mike Ciccone was on it. I remember you see it, Ciccone had his hand in his jacket in that picture, and we all go, God, he headlines, he wants Star Search, the girls think he's good looking, how are we going to get laid?
Right.
I mean, we're just open micers, and I'm cross-eyed. How am I going to get laid?
There were some comics, though, it wasn't about whether they were funny. They just knew how to get the waitresses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You come into a club and go, oh, Lance Montalto is here. Oh, shoot. Then whoever the waitress is, she slept with her guy for the next 3 months. You know, she's done her quota for 3 months.
Yeah, it's funny. You always you never sleep with a comedy club waitress because she slept with another actor.
Right, right.
not the ones on the road. Not really. Not like if they're in a city, it's different.
Right.
Because you have the club. But the guys that are just club road, you're like, oh, God.
Right.
I know if you slept with the girl in the audience, you go, God, she probably. Then you see, do you know a comic? And that means, right. I slept with this guy last week. It doesn't mean, do I know him? Like, why would you bring him up? Yeah. Oh, you're banging him, too.
But I was the chicks were the guys in my equation. Because I would fall, and the guys who went with, who were in clubs with me at the time know this, I would fall hopelessly in love with the road chick. You know, you're supposed to go get laid. I'd be on the plane coming home. You know, a man for a while would be going to me, so you slept with that. You know, I go, yeah, and I'm going to call her when I get home. I really want to bring her. And he'd go, Solomon, it's called a road, you know, for a reason. You know, you get laid and you never call them again.
Oh, God, you're like the romantic.
No, she's great. You know, I got to bring her. And then I'd bring, and a lot of times I would always end up often bring them to New York. And I would had this thing called BLWS, which a lot of people can relate to who aren't just comedians. Bad long weekend syndrome.
Okay.
Meet a girl, let's say in Indianapolis, right? And in Indianapolis, she's the hippest, happiest girl.
Right, right.
Plus, you got no place else to go, so you live with her Tuesday through Sunday, and you're the hippest happening moment, right? So now you fly her into New York, right? And you got four spots, let's say, on Sunday, Friday night, and three on Saturday. So you're going to bring her. Now New York's going to be hip with the Indianapolis girl. So you pick her up at LaGuardia Airport at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You can't stop. But to get to your apartment and have sex, you know, so that's about 5:05 p.m. The sex ends at maybe, you know, 5:07 p.m. And then you look at her and you go, what the hell am I doing with this chick in New York? She's like a Beverly Hillbilly here. What am I doing? So then you have BLWS, bad long weekend syndrome.
That's
where you are
funny.
Stuck with this girl, and it was terrible for them and terrible for you. And I would be hopelessly in love.
Yeah, see, that's not good, man.
Yeah.
I'm glad you got off the road.
But then I did have a lot of relationships with women who I met on the road. So some of them continued. Paul Reiser always says, what's Paul's net wife's name? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
Paul.
She's a shrink, right?
I'm not sure what she does, but he met her on the road.
Yeah.
And Tom Hertz's wife he met on the road.
I work with
Tom. So, but Reiser always said that Paul making it, did more for comedians getting laid than anything in the world, because here was a waitress. I think she was from Pittsburgh, but she's, you know.
I think she's from Syracuse.
Syracuse, okay. Oh, so right. he was a road, God bless Mr. and Mrs. Reiser, but a road conquest.
Okay.
And then he becomes a big success. So then the waitresses figure, you know, hey, hell, marrying a lawyer, I'll marry a comic who's
exactly.
Make, you know.
And then the guy's 80 and he's on the road doing the arms bit.
Right,
and they go, I made the wrong choice.
Right,
are you going out to Talladega to make money for the kids? So you start blowing up. Now you end up writing for Mad About You, right?
Right.
Now,
that's a long ways down the road, though.
But I mean, when did you move to LA?
Because I moved to LA.
On the road, you're doing a little TV. You're doing Letterman.
Right.
When did you say, okay, I'm moving to L.A.?
Well, what happened was, backtracking a little bit, was all my comedian peers or the graduating class above me, Reiser, Seinfeld, were all getting these sitcoms. You know, Romano just got one. And I started getting advice from Larry David and the people out here already that they said, you've got a great act, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's about men and women and politics and social stuff and all that. But if you've got to get a persona. You've got to clarify your persona.
Okay.
And the main thing of my act that got the most response was about me and women, and the basic premise was a slime. Guys are all slimes, but we're trying to evolve. So the guy said to me, Bill Grunfest, who went on to write a Mad About You and a lot of shows, and had run the Comedy Cellar in New York for years, and had discovered a lot of acts. He said to me, "You got to make it a first person thing." And Larry David said the same thing: first person thing. I blah 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 blah. So I am a slime trying to evolve.
Okay.
And get rid of everything in your act that isn't about that. So you're just clearly this one thing.
All right.
So that, as Bill put it to me, so that the assistant to the development guy can be at the water cooler, and development guy walks in on Monday at Fox Studios and says to this, you know, 18-year-old girl, "What did you do this weekend?" And she goes, "I was at the Improv." And he goes, "And who'd you see?" And she doesn't say, "I saw a funny Jewish comic." She says, "I saw a guy whose act is about being a slime guy trying to evolve."
Okay.
And the guy says, "Aha, maybe that's a pilot." So you immediately are this conceptual thing in people's minds.
Okay.
So I sliced and diced my act, took everything from third person, made it first person. So I am this way. I do this. I do that. And not going to talk about politics anymore. Barely going to talk about my family unless it's relevant to the women issue. Got that together, and really within a year, I had a pilot deal.
I had a
development deal with Warner Brothers,
wow.
And then a pilot with Fox.
So what was it about you being a slime?
Slime guy trying to evolve. It was a guy who his sidekick was Patrick Cassidy, and he was a ladies' man.
Okay,
and he's always trying to get me to be a slime and sort of use and play games with women and get over on them. And then I've got this part of my heart is the helpless romantic who wants to be, you know, fall in love all the time.
Okay,
and that was the thing, and it didn't make it. But I was right. Writing on it. They were really generous. You know, it was going to be one of those things based on the stand-up comedy of, like, Romano.
Right,
does.
Right.
But they were really generous. They let me write on it when we made the pilot.
Okay.
And two things happened. One was I loved writing on it, and I was already sort of getting tired of being on the road and
stand-up.
Right. And the other thing was I sat in those casting rooms when we were casting the thing and went, man, there are so many talented actors out here. And that was sort of the next step for my career. Like, I would have been started going up for pilots and stuff because the stand-up had taken me to a certain level. And I was like, man, there's just so many talented people. I don't want to be, I'm no better than, you know,
right.
I am nobody's God's gift. And I'm looking at a lot of guys. At 310, there's a God's gift. And at 315, we're bringing in another
right.
God's gift. These people are good. So I just said, I'm becoming a writer.
So you started,
that was it.
So you wrote for your own pilot, but then how did Paul Reiser remember you, or how that happened, or how'd you end up getting into that?
Well, I had a great manager who hooked me up with Roseanne, and I wrote some of Roseanne's stuff. I signed something which I never signed, so I'm really not supposed to say this, but theoretically I'm not supposed to say this, but I helped Roseanne with her stuff for a while. She was going to do a special, and we were writing the special. Me and Wendy Liebman and...
Wendy's on next week.
Oh, ask her about this. And if she wants to break the confidentiality agreement. So we wrote a lot of stuff for Roseanne, but then she never ended up doing the special. So we ended up just being employed to write a lot of stuff that never got used. And then I wrote a pilot, and I gave it to Larry David. Because I wanted to write on Seinfeld, and Larry I knew very well, or pretty well. You know, he's one of these mentor type
people. Right.
You know, he was a god to me, but I knew him well enough to send him the script and him to be nice to me. And he said, you know, you shouldn't work on Seinfeld this year because I'm going to be gone a year, and you want to be here while I'm here to sort of shepherd you. So he sent it over. This happened one afternoon. I had an agent. You know, who cares?
Right.
Like always, who cares if you have an agent?
Yeah.
He sent it over to Larry Charles, his buddy who was at Reiser's show. I sent it over to Paul Reiser, who I personally knew, and one afternoon I had a job.
Wow. Now, how long did you write with them?
2 years.
And now, was that a... It must have been a weird process, because was it a lot of comics, like, I mean, writing, or was it just... I mean, were you, like, one of the only people with background? Because Paul had stand-up background, and you had a background.
There weren't a lot of comics. There was Ron Darien was on the show.
I remember him.
That was another guy from our group.
Ron Darien. I remember.
You know, if I would really sit here and think, I'd come up with a bunch of names. I mean, there wasn't an endless number of names.
I remember, because that's a name that I remember.
Right.
I still remember all the pictures of the comedy work
right.
stuff. I still remember the name Ron Darien.
Right. Yeah. Mike Reynolds, who's now...
what's he doing?
He's, I believe, the last I heard, he was dealing... he's in work in casinos in Vegas. I think he's a blackjack dealer or a croupier or a roulette guy, something like that. He's at the Felt.
Because I remember his name, Mike Reynolds.
Mike Reynolds?
Yeah.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Hey, they know me. Yeah. Yeah. I met him once at the Comedy Works.
Right, yeah.
I remember I went to see him perform, actually. And that's with this lovely
Stu Trivax? The names are starting to pop out of my mind.
Well, didn't he do some writing? Trivax went on the right, didn't or?
I'm not sure what Stu went out to do.
Was he bald with a mustache?
Yeah, he was a very good look, yeah. But he was Orthodox Jewish, which sort of held him. I think Mark Cohn didn't work on Friday nights.
That would hurt.
I was on the road a few times with Mark Cohn, where I would headline on Fridays, and he would...
he went in
Sabbath, and then he'd hide a lot on Saturday.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're writing, and then, did you miss the stand-up when you were writing?
I didn't do stand-up for, I really happily left it.
Okay.
And when the pilot happened.
I left it for 10 or 12 years.
I happily left it, and I didn't do it for about 12 years. And now I am teaching stand-up and joke writing and humor writing and all these different sort of disciplines I've come up with at colleges around town privately. And I'm going to be – and actually, can I promote something?
You can promote whatever you want.
I'm teaching
– You told me about the hernias. Okay. I have a hernia, not cancer. You can say whatever you want, Jonathan.
I'm promoting Schuldeist Hospital in Hamilton, Canada. Fine job. With the hernia.
I'll be at the Yuck Yucks in Hamilton, then going to get my hernia operation.
Right. there's a place called the Writer's Store, which is sort of this all roads meet place for
I know a guy who works there. Italian kid from Boston.
That clears it up.
No, really, there's not many workers there. He's got a great voice.
I see.
His sister does karaoke. His last name's Mooring. Giovanni?
I don't know anybody there.
Oh, I thought you knew that.
Okay. I just know. I'm teaching a seminar there.
Okay.
I think it's the second Saturday in April. It's called Joke Writing Across Many Mediums.
Okay.
And it's sort of getting yourself to think funny in all different mediums, from screenplay to essay to short story to stand-up, and also about how to translate humor between different mediums. So I've been teaching that course around town.
How long of a course is that?
It's one day symposium.
2 hours?
3 hours.
Okay.
I think we're going to go 2.5 hours,
okay.
3 hours. But I teach different, you can go to schoolforstandup.com.
Okay.
And you find out about all the different stuff I teach. But anyway, the reason why we're on this is because now, getting back into teaching, I've started to do stand-up a little bit. And I love it.
It's weird you come back. I came back to it, and it's like, I help the younger guys out, and I don't care anymore. Like, you always have to worry, like, if the bits you would do because you wanted to get rebooked and it was your job. Now I just go up and have fun.
Yeah.
And it's fun. So,
yeah.
So where have you been getting up at?
I really haven't been getting up much. I've been getting up to, I have to figure it out because the business is sort of a fog to me. I don't really quite understand how it all works now to get out there and perform.
It's so different out there than it was back east.
Yeah,
it's
and
so
I'm
different.
So spoiled. Our generation is so spoiled, you know. You want to be a starting comic, you can't do 3 sets a night now.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So, I mean, I sound like an old crotchety jerk, you know. Oh, we're so spoiled, and we did 3 sets a night. But really, I'm not sure if I'm going to pursue it because it's such a different parameters to pursue it under.
It's weird. I mean, I don't bust my chops to get out there, but I get on stage, and you can. But then it's also it's very different because it's very it's inundated with 7-minute sets. I showed up this place a few weeks ago. I get the email, I'm like, I'll just go over and do a set, and the email is like, okay, everyone's doing 5 minutes. I'm not driving to do five. Not that I have an attitude, but I'm not driving. It's not worth my time to just go do 5 minutes. I'd rather sit at home and watch, you know, Big Bang Theory or something. You know what I mean? I'd rather sit in my go down to the bar and bitch about the girl who shortchanged me. I'd rather do that for 5 minutes.
I'm like,
and then you get in that mentality when you have to do 15, 20, 25 minutes. You don't know how to do it anymore.
Right.
You're just doing like 7 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's very different now. I mean, as my understanding. But I love doing it when I do it now. And I do it when I do the graduation shows for my students. I'll host that, and that's fun.
Where do you guys do the shows at usually?
Well, there's different schools I teach at. I teach at the Santa Monica Community College, and then we do the graduation shows at the Comedy Store.
Okay.
And I teach at Harbor College, and then we do the graduation shows at this fantastic space I urge people to check out called the Warner Annex in San Pedro.
Okay.
And they do music and all sorts of stuff there, but they do comedy night there when we do our graduation show. And then I've taught up at Mission College, and then we do the graduation show at Flappers.
Okay, that's cool.
So we do it at different places.
So how long? So do you enjoy imparting your knowledge on these people?
I mean, having a blast.
Because, you know,
love it.
And I mean, it's so funny. It's so funny that, like, a lot of these younger comics don't know like your guys' generation. Like, they don't know that all you guys, like you and Middleman, and all, have been on TV freaking 50 times.
Right.
You know? And,
right.
Like, and it's just weird. It's because it's the comedy was different then. I mean, I think it's like everyone now tries to be really hip and they're too cool for the room. But everyone was good. Comics were always too cool for the room. We just didn't tell them. We just didn't right. tell the room we were too cool for them.
Right.
You know, and that's a weird thing. So I mean, do you get like what are your age group? How old are the people that come on your do take your class?
You know, it's so funny you say that because I always when people ask me on my classes, I'm always saying, oh, the kids are great. And then, but the kids, in point of fact, we've had a couple. I've let them in. A couple of kids who are like 14 came with their parents. But we, in my last group, we had a guy 76 years old. So we have literally the spectrum from 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. There is no every age.
Okay, so
not even a group in one particular age more or less than any other group.
And then they get up and they perform.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
Do you after that, do you coach them at all, or after the set, do you write notes now and go, here's what you did wrong? Because it is their first time, so
it's
sort of weird.
Well, we do it. Well, they get to perform. They get to perform in class too. So there's notes as you're performing in the classroom. You know, you go, hey, you could do this differently, do that. What we do in class most of the time is work on a set because I want them to come out of this 6 weeks, which is all it is at the community colleges.
It's a six-week class.
Yeah. With a set to go perform at the graduation show. A lot of the classes I know they do more with students getting to stand up, and I do that with the intermediate and the advanced classes that I teach privately. And I know some of the students, they say, you know, I dug this other guy's class because we got to do stand-up more. But I feel like I want you to have an act. Then you can go get yourself to an open mic night.
Right,
and
right.
Stand up.
Yeah. That's...
So, you know, different strokes for different folks. That's what
well, the weird thing about those classes is, you know, a lot of people just don't even follow it. I mean, I took a class and I stayed in, but a lot of people went like once or twice. And I took a learning arts class from Brian McKim and Tracy Skeen.
Right.
And it was wonderful for me because I, as this thing, so many people don't know how, like you said, when you were younger and you saw like David Sayer or whatever on TV,
right.
You're like, How do I do? You don't know how to get there, and that's what's so great about these classes. Like me, it said it was in Philadelphia, and it said, okay, same thing. We didn't get up and stay in class. We wrote bits, and we talked about here's comedy, and this is it. And then it got us to work an act, and when we got up, we actually had an act.
Right.
And a lot of people, the people want to hang in, but a lot of people dropped out just because they weren't funny.
Right.
You know, that's what sucks sometimes. Some people just aren't funny, and it's awful, but it's, you know, and there's a lot of them getting stateside that just aren't funny, but it's crazy.
I've been of two minds about this. When I first started hearing about people were teaching stand-up comedy, I was teaching it to kids, which I just loved doing because I had worked with kids and others, and I thought, oh, this will be fun.
Nothing like an 8-year-old telling vagina jokes, I'll tell you.
nothing better. Usually they should close with it, but, you know, but nothing like it. My attitude was, why should adults study stand-up comedy? Do, you know, write a bunch of jokes. You're an adult. You can go out, take yourself, get in the car, and go to an open mic night, then go home, figure out what you did wrong, and figure it out yourself, like we did. And so I wrote this stand-up comedy classes for kids, and then while I was figuring out stuff for the kids, I started thinking up all this sort of sophisticated ideas I had, really, to me, fascinating ideas, to me, and I wanted to impart them to kids, but they're way over their heads. So I started having all these notes of, gee, if I ever taught adults, I could tell them about this. So I taught a class to adults just because I wanted to, because I thought I'd be good at it, but I've gradually been won over to the idea that teaching stand-up is a good idea because there's less stage time. And so why not have a huge leg up when you start of really knowing how to construct a joke? And why not have a place to get some stage time that's not meaning you have to go wait in line and you have to get a number and all that stuff? So I now... used to think it was silly that it was you get it done on your own. Now I see there's great reasons. It saves time. You come at it. You're way ahead where you would have been, and you're getting free stage time. I now believe in teaching adult stand-up.
Well,
it makes sense to me.
And this is your website. Your website is JonathanLeeSolomon.com.
Right.
And that's where we
LEIGH.
LEIGH. And you have your school for stand-up, and you got the coaching and consulting.
Right.
Blogs and radio. Now you wrote for the Huffington Post. Is that something I hear?
Still do. Yeah.
You still write for Now, how often do you write for them? What do you write about?
Well, I'm starting to write again now, I think, because of the collection. I'm a political junkie, so I'm going to... it's funny, because I was listening to one of your shows with Cesario.
Okay.
And you were talking about how, you know, you'd go late at night in bed, you'd have the transistor radio. No, what you got, you guys are so much younger than me. But Cesario's my age. I'm confused now. You were talking about watching baseball games and putting the picture down but listening to the sound, wasn't it?
What I would do was, when when, because us back east, when the Phillies would play on the West Coast,
right,
the game would be at like 10 o'clock out here.
Right, yeah.
So my parents, I'd already tucked in bed. I would turn on the TV but not put the sound on, and I would watch the game so they wouldn't hear, just so I could watch the game. But then the radio, my buddy would say, if we put like in the kitchen or like in our bedroom, if we put the radio in the right angle from like near Philadelphia, you could get like a Cleveland Indians ball game or a Pittsburgh game. She'd be like, wow, I got you got Pittsburgh. Oh, my God. I got Cincinnati. Oh, my God. That's so cool. How'd you do it? And, of course, you'd never find it again. But that's what we're – it's just the sports thing.
You know, that reminds me of a stand-up thing was I used to do these road gigs, not the college gigs. And okay, let's say I'd play a college in, like, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
All right.
And I'd rent the car at a New York City. And I'd drive to Harrisburg. And I'd get done with the gig at 2 in the morning. And I'd pick up a radio station from Kansas City, right?
Right.
And I'd listen to it all the way home, all the way back into Manhattan. I'd listen to a radio station from Kansas City, and then I'd turn off the radio, get out of the car, get a pack of cigarettes, get back in the car, turn back on the radio, same spot, hadn't moved it out, it's gone.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
It was so sad. It was like, oh, the gig is over now.
That's true. I'd be like, I heard Ken Griffey at the Senior.
Right there, you listen to a baseball game.
From the bedroom. Yeah. What does that have to do with your politics? So you said,
Was you guys? That's so funny. I think Cesario's my age, but we didn't have a TV. I didn't have a TV in the room. What I had was my parents would give me the transistor radio, and you'd be under the covers.
All right.
And I'd let them go to bed, and then I'd turn it on. But what I listened to late at night, which is what I'm thinking of recently, is I would listen to the primaries.
Okay.
I was up late at night, you know, waiting for the returns to come in from the California primaries in the East Coast. So it was like 4 in the morning, and I'd waiting to find out if Robert Kennedy had beaten, you know, Humphrey.
Okay.
And so that's what kind of political junkie I was. So I'm still a political junkie. So during campaign season, I write a lot of blogs, straight and humorous, about the campaign season. But I also have done some stuff which got a lot of, I would even say vitriol from some fellow comics. I wrote a bunch of pieces about analyzing or my take on the comedy of Carlin. And Robin Williams and a lot of local a lot of the top comics now.
Okay.
And people should go check it out. Some people get very exercised at my point of view. My take on it. What do you want to hear?
We have 4 minutes left.
Okay, well, my take on
it. But they can find us on your website.
Yeah, go look at it. My take on it is Robin Williams and Carlin, in their own way, are oversold compared to what they should be known as.
Okay.
They're overhyped.
Well, why? I mean, I can see Robin Williams, but
because relatively simple. Carlin, because he is known for being, he's less funny than, he's profound, but less funny than he's thought to have been.
Okay.
Williams is funny, but he's less profound than I've thought to have been. Williams would bring up a profound idea, then play it off with a dick joke. That's where he'd get the laugh.
Okay.
You know, God is my dick.
All right.
And then Carlin would bring something, say something profound about God, but he wouldn't get a big laugh out of it. The great comic can take a profound question and get a huge laugh out of answering the profound question on the mark, on the nose of that question, really answering the question.
All right.
Am I making sense?
Yeah, making complete sense.
Good. Okay.
And I see it. It's called Let Us Now Bash Robin Williams. Yeah. The final chapter. I see it. And that was in the Huffington Post?
Yeah, there was a couple. I also did a lot of defending fellow comics.
Okay. You know? I'm just looking at this right now, just flipping around.
Yeah.
And he had that.
Because the news, USA Today did an article saying why certain comics aren't funny. And I just said, yeah, you go do 10 minutes, and then you tell us why certain comics are funny.
Yeah, people who, you know, I'm tired of people going, oh, this guy's not funny. You know, there's, what does a person know who's writing a newspaper article about comedy?
If you're filling a stadium, you're doing something.
Yeah, it's like the people who sit there and go, oh, yeah, man, that Adam Sandler movie got 2 stars because it was stupid. Yeah, no crap. That's why I went to see Happy Gilmore. I didn't think it was going to be, like, literary device. I didn't think it was going to be Death of a Salesman.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people, like, there's a guy named David Elliott in one of them in San Diego, the most pompous film director. And you know he probably wrote some crappy screenplay once and got shunned. And he'd be like, this movie, yeah, it's called So, you know, So I Married a Car. It's not going to be a smart film.
Right. When I found out it wasn't subtitled, boy, was I surprised. Oh, it's an American.
It was a Hyundai. Hey, what the hell? Anyway, we got out. We have about 2 minutes to wrap up.
Let's go back to the hernia issue.
So it is a hernia. It's not a cancer.
Folks, this is a radio show. You can't see. I've not actually crawled over the mic to feel around.
He can't see. I'm behind the host
drawing there. No.
I just want to know because it's.
I think you'll be all right.
I think I have to go get health insurance.
Yes, you do.
Not if you get operated.
And you can't. Yeah. Now you got to game the system. You got to not have them know that you have a hernia.
Yeah.
And then you have to go to a different doctor to have them go, oh, I have a hernia. You can't go with like a precondition, right?
No, I will just say, I'll say.
Can I just point out, we're doing the dumbest. You're going to try and game the system. But first, tell a national audience that you're going to do it.
I know.
This is a good way to get caught.
It's always good to get caught. But now I don't have a hernia. Okay. Except gas.
No, right. Except gas. Stream gas.
So give the rundown again. The comedy. What's the website?
Oh, schoolforstandup.
Okay.
.com.
And now this one's
and
your next
the four one. Is F-O-R. And then if you want to know all about me, eventually these websites will be confined. It's Jonathan Lee Solomon, L-E-I-G-H.
And now when's your next class coming up?
I'm teaching an intermediate class at the Promenade Theater in Santa Monica starting in March. Then I'll be a beginner's class. We'll start up again at the Santa Monica Community College in April.
Okay.
There's always stuff rotating around going on.
Okay.
Lots of classes.
Well,
We have a great, that's the main thing to say.
Go take the class,
people. Great time.
That's what's good. I want to thank you for coming on, Jonathan.
Really, this has been so much fun.
Thank you. You know, we'll get you back when I start regenerating my guests every 6 months now, because people have stories. We never hit anything. We start talking, and everyone goes, crap, I don't know what we're going to talk about. They go, wait, it's over? Wait, we talked about hitchhiking naked with hernias.
Right.
What
the
hell's that?
Well, I got to come back to find out how the hernia operation works out. So.
Exactly. Anyway, people, hit me an email, Cooper, Indy100, INDIE100.com. Every Friday, Living the Law. 3 o'clock with me, John Fogerholm, and Sheldon Anderson. This Sunday at the Ha Ha Cafe. Tuesday at the Palms. I'll be putting up a bunch of old episodes on iTunes. Cooper Talk, one word, put a search. I want to thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Remember, I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guests, and I am going out and yelling at bartenders now. Have a good day.